This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast. Chris Graham and Crystal Graham, my co-hosts for this podcast. We're going to talk about the CDC suicide report that was out today. A CDC report on suicide numbers comparing 1999 to 2017, last year, for which full numbers are available. It was part of a bigger report on mortality in the United States. But the numbers on suicide were alarming. Of course, we have to mention Crystal, suicide prevention advocate, former Virginia area director of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, long history in this field. And so I just have to ask first, Crystal, you know, and there's a story on the Augusta Free Press website with a lot of the details, a lot of the numbers, facts, and figures. Your first response upon seeing these numbers, seeing this report?
I don't think that it's a big surprise. There have been a lot of efforts in the last 10 years to work at finally reducing the suicide rate, and some efforts being made to reduce the suicide rate 20% by 2020. It seems like that this report shows that not only are those efforts not working, but the suicide rate is going up. There will be some people that say that part of the reason that the numbers are going up is because they're being reported more accurately now than they have in the past. There's been some efforts made for medical examiners to start reporting the cause of death, and that now includes suicide. So they're asking them to actually report it as suicide versus some other cause of death. So it could be, too, that the reporting is getting better, and so in some ways that's the reason that the numbers are showing higher. But the report is alarming for many reasons. The biggest one is that there's been a 33% increase in suicide in the last 20 years. So despite all the efforts of national and local organizations to try to prevent suicide, obviously it's on the rise.
Yeah, and so the numbers are 10.5 suicide deaths per 100,000 in 1999, 14.0 suicide deaths per 100,000 in 2017. So as Crystal mentioned, you know, the goal in the Healthy 2020 initiative actually was Healthy People 2020 initiative is it's an overarching goal set by the CDC for health in various ways, various fields for the United States by the year 2020. Suicide, again, just part of this report, but the goal had been to see that rate go down to 10.2 per 100,000 deaths by 2020, and instead it's gone way in the other direction. And it's actually had an impact. I was noticing this, Crystal, and some other reporting on this today by other media sources, that actually largely because of the increase in the suicide rate among younger people, people that are 20s, 30s, 40s, actually, the overall life expectancy has actually gone down. And this is something that we always had prided ourselves on for generations, that every generation, it seemed like, outlived their predecessors because we got healthier. We got, you know, food's better and, you know, working conditions are better, etc. But, yeah, life expectancy is down. So it's CDC Director Robert R. Redfield says the latest CDC data show that U.S. life expectancy has declined over the past few years. This troubling trend is largely driven by deaths from drug overdoses and suicide. Life expectancy gives us a snapshot of the nation's overall health. These sobering statistics are a wake-up call that we are losing too many Americans too early and too often to conditions that are entirely preventable.
Well, and I think that's important to note is that, you know, suicide is 100% preventable, and that most people who even make attempts in their lives go on to lead healthy lives after that attempt. And so, you know, what's important is that more effort is put on prevention. I think that a lot of national organizations tend to focus on after a loss. I mean, obviously, someone who has lost a loved one to suicide, they're more apt to give to a cause. And so that, you know, when you look at fundraising, which is an important part of the overall picture, focusing on someone who's lost someone is more effective. But long term, we have to look more at prevention. We have to look more at educating the community on risk factors and warning signs. Virginia's taken a really proactive approach. They're only one of two states in the United States that are requiring now some kind of mental health education in the school systems. That hasn't come to fruition yet. Some school systems throughout Virginia are putting together their own programs and have already started that. But I've been talking with Senator Creedy's office today, in fact, regarding this initiative and regarding what Virginia is going to be doing. And so right now they're working with the Department of Education to develop the curriculum, which should be completed by the fall. And then the goal is to implement that sometime next spring among 9th and 10th graders as part of their health education. And so certainly if someone, you know, you mentioned my credentials at the beginning of the podcast, but I also lost my twin sister at age 15 to suicide. And obviously suicide rates are up among, like we said, all those age groups. I think it's age 10 to 74 between male and female. The rate is up. But especially among young people, it's the second leading cause of death. That's from ages 10 to 34. So that's very alarming. And when I look at, like, my twin sister who died by suicide, I think as a teenager, I knew she had warning signs. She talked openly about suicide, but none of us knew what to do. We just assumed we never knew anyone who had died by suicide, so we just kind of let that go. I think with this training, my hope is that these young people will be able to look out for their peers and then know what to do next, because I think it's one thing to recognize it, but it's another thing to know what you're supposed to do. I mean, the training now is just tell an adult, you know, and I think it needs to go beyond that. So I'm really interested in the curriculum that's being developed. I've offered to serve on any kind of working group or task force associated with that, because I think it's really important that students have the tools that they need to help their friends.
Yeah, you know, and I might be jumping around here a little bit, but when I was looking through the numbers and pouring through this, writing our report on Augusta Free Press today, one thing that jumped out at me, and so many things jumped out, but one thing that really jumped out was the numbers among males. And you had a reason for this, so I wanted to kind of replay this conversation just for our listeners on the podcast. Because you look at, say, 15 to 24-year-old females, the number, the success rate of suicide completion, 5.8%, 5.8 deaths per 100,000 deaths for 15 to 24, whereas for men, it's 22.7. For women, age 25 to 44, 7.8 deaths per 100,000. For men 25 to 44, 27.5. Those numbers, and if, for 45 to 64, 9.7 deaths per 100,000 for women. 30.1 deaths per 100,000 for men 45 to 64. I said that. I said, what is the reason for those huge discrepancies? You had a really quick answer.
I did. Well, one, you know, that's a lot of numbers. We're talking really fast. But what it boils down to is that men are more successful completing suicide than females. And the reason for that is men tend to choose a more lethal means, like a firearm, when they're making their suicide attempt. Women traditionally choose a less lethal means, something where they have access to be saved, whether it's a drug overdose or, you know, something that they can get medical care for. So that's the reason why the completion rate is higher for men versus women. As I said, most of the time, if you can remove means, and this goes into the training that I'm talking about related to prevention. While I talked a lot about, I'd like to see what they're developing for the 9th and 10th graders in the school system, there are tons of trainings that are offered by an organization, I believe, out of Canada called Living Works. And they're education that is aimed at making any member of your community able to stop suicide. And by stop suicide, we don't mean it's the long-term solution, but usually when someone's in crisis, it's for an hour or less, you know, that they're in this moment of crisis. Sometimes it's 20 minutes that they're in this moment where they're suicidal, where they're in that crisis. And so the idea is to be able to move that person beyond that crisis to get them somewhere safe for now. And a big part of that has to do with mean safety. So when we're talking about how men die more by suicide, that has a lot to do with the firearm. So if you can talk to someone and have a conversation and know what to ask them, are you thinking of suicide? Have you thought about how you would do this? And if they say, you know, well, there's a gun downstairs, or I was thinking of taking the pills in the cabinet or something like that, most of the time, if you can remove that means at that time, if you ask them, do you think, would it be okay for me to give the guns to your father or to someone else outside of the household just for now? Most people actually do want to live, you know, so if you can find a way to remove that method, they aren't likely to move on to another method. In crisis, you can't think beyond that moment. You can't think beyond, I want the pain to stop right now. So if they're thinking about killing themselves with a gun in their house and you can get the gun out of the house, at least for now, you've likely saved that person's life. I mean, there is more to it. I mean, you do have to look at a more long-term approach. They still need to go see a psychologist or a psychiatrist. They still need to get into some counseling. There may be medications that need to be prescribed. There's still a long-term solution to their overall mental health. But the important thing is to get someone out of crisis at that very moment. And there are tons of trainings available. There's one coming up in Stanton here soon. Safe Talk.
I was getting ready to ask you about that. I brought it up on the screen here for us to go over. You talk for our listeners who are in the Stanton, Waynesboro, Augusta area. Talk about that. There's a Save Talk coming up December 17th at Panera Bread in Waynesboro. It's 3.5 hours, starting at 8:30 in the morning, going till noon. Pre-registration is required, and it's put on by the Greater Augusta Prevention Partners, GAP.
They're the ones who sent it out, but they're actually being presented by Aaron Botkins, who's with Valley Community Services Board, and usually it's in partnership with Lockettock, Virginia. I think this one is as well. So let me say a little something just about this training and then about those organizations as a whole. There are really three trainings that are offered primarily in this region. The first one is a one-hour training called Talk Saves Lives. It's a very basic. Here are the warning signs. Here are the risk factors. It's 1 hour. It's a really introductory course. The one being offered by Valley Community Services Board in Lockettock, Virginia, that's happening at Panera Bread, is a half-day course, and it's more in-depth, and it's more about connecting people with the health professionals. So it's not really an intervention plan, but it's really about, okay, here are the risk factors, here are the warning signs, and here's who you should connect a person with. It's a great thing for anyone to participate in. I always say whether you're someone who's involved in a church or you're involved in nonprofits or you deal with anyone who deals with mental health conditions, which is so many people who are undiagnosed, this is a very beneficial course. It's free thanks to some grants from the Department of Behavioral Health in this case. So there's no reason not to take the time to take that course. So Aaron Botkin at Valley Community Services Board is your connection for that one. The one that I was talking about a little bit earlier, which is more of the intervention plan, is a training called Assist. And that's one of those trainings that was developed by LivingWorks. And it's a full two-day class, and it's very intensive. But it really teaches you to think about your own thoughts of suicide and to, you know, go through that. But also the risk factors, the warning signs, and then put you in realistic situations for dealing with it. So there's a lot of role-playing involved with it. And the idea behind it is that if someone is having thoughts of suicide, that you could actually have a conversation with that person to get them somewhere safe for now. And again, it's a short-term solution, but it will save lives. I personally have had several friends that I've been able to have a conversation with and know the kinds of things that I should be asking as a result of this training. And I know that several of my friends who have also taken this class have also used it many times. So I don't have an Assist on the calendar for this area right now, but that's one of the things that I want to work to do. You know, Chris, I've talked to you personally about the idea of starting a nonprofit in this area. And one of the things that I hope to do is, as part of that process, is provide more education. Some of these programs, but also some additional programs that haven't been offered in this area yet, and do that more on a monthly basis, because I think there's so much that we can all learn. And you never know when you're going to need this information. There are people who reach out to me on a daily basis who say, I'm worried about this person in my life. What do I do? And so I try to give them the Cliff Notes version of the Assist training, you know, that teaches them a little bit about what kind of questions to ask, and then based on their responses, what they could do. But this is the kind of training that I think everyone in our community should take advantage of, everyone in the world should take advantage of.
And for people listening out there to this podcast, if you were drawn to the podcast because you have a mental health issue on your own, we can't reinforce this message enough. You know, you don't need to be ashamed of that. People who have heart conditions aren't ashamed. They have a heart condition. If you have diabetes, you're not ashamed you've got diabetes. But for some reason, there's still this stigma to the idea that, well, I better not tell anybody that I've got a mental health issue because people will think about me differently. And that's how mental health problems can persist, grow, get worse because you leave them untreated. And so we've got to get over that, and we've got to encourage people, hey, if you've got an issue, be upfront about it. Don't be ashamed. Deal with it.
And this gets back to your same question about why men have more completion as well. Men are often taught that they have to be the breadwinners in the family. They have to be tough. They have to, you know, have that demeanor. And showing a weakness, showing that they're dealing with depression or they're dealing with another mental health condition, oftentimes they just prefer to keep that inside and keep that to themselves. Whereas if they were to seek treatment for this, which again, like you said, drop those barriers, you know, don't let that stigma stand in their way and go and get treatment. There is medication, there is counseling available. You know, it's different for everyone what works for you, but more than likely you can get on a path to a much healthier life and then, you know, not have thoughts of suicide that often, you know, that often accompany those mental health conditions. So Yeah, it's well past time that people start treating mental health just as what it is. It's an attack of the brain in the same way you mentioned the heart attack or another attack that someone might have. So the quicker we can get to that as a society and realize that, you know, you don't just tell someone, oh, you'll feel better tomorrow or get some rest or something like that, and you start treating this like the major issue that it is and giving it the funding that it deserves, you know, the more likely we are to get to a solution where suicide rates actually do start to decline, which is ultimately the goal of everyone, whether you're a volunteer or someone working in suicide prevention.
So for anyone out there who's dealing with these issues, if you're thinking about suicide, you're worried about a friend or a loved one, you just want emotional support, the National Suicide Prevention Hotline is available. The Lifeline is available 24/7. That number is 800-273-TALK. That's 800-273-8255. You can also go online, suicidepreventionlifeline.org. We're going to have information on our website linking you to that, making that more easy for you to be able to access. So, and that goes for everybody. If you're concerned for yourself, if you're concerned for someone else, friend, coworker, loved one, whatever the case may be, please don't hesitate to call and get yourself or get someone else who needs it the help they need. So, Crystal, anything else on this report that we should be thinking about as we wrap up our podcast?
I mean, I think we all have this goal to reduce the suicide rate, and I think what it's showing is that whatever we're doing now isn't working yet. And it's not to say that some of the measures that are putting in place won't have long-term impact. So I think just, you know, communities as a whole and, you know, individuals nationwide, like we all need to start recognizing the fact that mental health is as scary as it is, you know, the fact that it's not scary in the fact that you can get treatment for it, but if it's undiagnosed, if people are afraid to go to their doctor and talk about this, if military folks are afraid to go to their commanding officer because they might lose their rank, you know, those kinds of things cannot continue to happen and us expect this problem to go away. You know, as a community, we need to be more embracing of people who struggle. There's nothing wrong with someone who struggles. It's a health condition just like anything else that's wrong with you physically, you know. And so being able to go and get treatment and not feel like doing so, you know, diminishes you as a person in any way. You know, I think that that's the big thing. If you feel like you're depressed and it's more than just something short term, or you know someone who's having these changes, you know. And a lot of times with teenagers it's dismissed as, oh, that's teenage behavior. But if they are changes and they do persist, then it's something that it wouldn't hurt to get that person to a mental health professional. And in our community, there's a ton of resources, but a great place to start is Valley Community Services Board. They're based in Stanton. They have group counseling. They have individual counseling. And while they're not open 24 hours a day, when they are there, you can get help if you need it. So the Lifeline's a great resource 24/7. I highly recommend a connection with Valley Community Services Board as a starting point if you're in this community. And beyond that, just reach out. You know, always trust your gut in these situations. If you're worried about someone, talk to someone, whether it's Valley Community Services Board, whether it's the Lifeline or another professional in this community, because the worst you can be is wrong. And, you know, the worst that can happen is a friend can know that you care about them deeply. And that if they ever do get in a situation where they feel suicidal, they have someone to come to.
Again, that Suicide Prevention Lifeline phone number, 800-273-8255. And please do not hesitate to call if you feel you need to on your behalf or someone else's behalf. For Crystal Graham, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Thanks for listening.